Good evening, and welcome to Talk Truth Radio with your host, Dr. Rain Morgan. Dr. Rain Morgan is Mother Earth, and you can look forward to the next 3 hours of enlightening talk. What are the issues? More importantly, what are the solutions? We hold the torch. Together we stand. Now join Dr. Rain and this evening's guest. Open your mind and have a good time.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Talk Truth Radio. I'm your host. I'm Dr. Rain Morgan, and I've been waiting to do this show. I got a brilliant idea, I thought. We had such a good time week before last when we brought Monica Lewis on that I thought, you know, we need to teach Sabian astrology. So the first hour and a half of our show this evening is going to be with Monica Lewis, and we're going to do the beginning of our astrology classes. So get stuff to write on, and please go to the website because the show will be archived, and you can download with an MP3. You can listen to this at any time. So without I go on and on, Monica Lewis, good evening.
Hello, Rain. Hello, everyone. It's good to be back with you this week.
Hey, cool. We're going to have a good time.
Brilliant idea, so here we are.
It was a brilliant idea, wasn't it?
Yes, yes.
If I do say so myself. Well,
now I wanted to tell you, Rain. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead. You talk.
I was going to tell you, Rain, I mailed you today in the mail my 14-page outline for the class idea over the air you have, and
oh, cool.
You'll get that in the mail, and then you can put that on your website, and people could download that and follow along.
Yeah, that's we're going to do that. I've got a new web person who's getting all my stuff up, so I'm excited, and I'm going to put on the website your information for people wanting a private reading from you. Guys and dolls out there listening to me, she is a master astrologer, and she has a pretty good grasp on life to go with it. So if you want the quintessential reading that will really help to enlighten what's going on in your life, you really, really, really could give Monica a call. Monica, give your information before we get started.
Okay.
How to get a hold of you.
Okay. My phone number to contact me is area code 303-665-4675. May I repeat that?
Absolutely.
My phone number is area code 303-665-4675. And my email is thesabian, and that's lowercase T-H-E, then capitalize the S, S-A-B-I-A-N, at sign, webtv.net.
Okay.
And you can email me there. That's my business box.
Okay. Wonderful. All right. And let's get started on this, Monica. I'm excited about this. I have never made any bones about my least knowledge in the sciences is astrology. Astrology is like speaking a language. And if you didn't grow up in it, I grew up more from the world of tarot and numerology and, Jungian psychology, and just astrology is one of the last sciences as a magician. I know the Hebrew alphabet, and I'm not well versed in astrology. I know a little bit, but it's not enough to amount to anything. So my idea, with you, Monica, is to actually create a study course over the radio that people can go to the website, they can order from you, And we're working on putting this together now. But it's a real teaching tool. And as I said to you, I have had many astrology readings over the years. And you have to be the most moving reader that I have ever experienced. So we're going to begin in talking about the moons, correct?
Yes, we're going to talk about the phases of the moon.
Okay.
And the reason I want to start about the phases of the moon is if one understands the astrological meaning of the phases of the moon, one can understand the astrological relationship between any two planets in the chart. Because a conjunction, for example, in a chart, when you say astrologically a conjunction, for example, you have Mars and Venus conjunct in your chart, that's the same thing as saying that you have a new moon. It's the new moon aspect. So when I teach my classes on astrology, I teach people the phases of the moon, because if they learn the phases of the moon, then they have the basis to understand any and all astrological aspects, regardless of planets and points. And the nice thing, too, is the moon is out there in the sky, and you can watch it wax and wane. So mm-hmm. It's really very visual and very obvious. And the second reason I teach it is because the phase of the moon under which one is born. May I use you as an example, Dr.
Absolutely.
Moore? Okay. You're born at the full moon, and the full moon is an opposition, meaning the sun and moon are directly opposite each other. And so any aspect of the chart that is in opposition in anyone's chart is a full moon aspect. And in your case, a full moon means that the two things are highly conscious. It's the beginning of consciousness, when consciousness takes a definite form. So anytime you look at anyone's opposition of planets in the chart, you think, oh, that's a full moon aspect. And if you know what the full moon means, you understand how these two of the planets relate. So that's why I do it. And it's also because the phase of the moon under which one is born is how the left and right brain of the left brain and right brain, the hemispheres relate. The right brain is the moon and the left brain is the sun. So if you know the angle of the phase of the moon under which you were born, you understand how the left and right brain in your own head are wired together. And
is that why I'm so right-brained?
There's a lot of reasons you're right-brained. You have moon in Cancer, which emphasizes the moon over the sun. But there's a lot of other aspects, but it makes it why you're so conscious of it and why you're working so hard at conscious evolution. Why, for example, that you know the Hebrew alphabet and you've done all these magical trainings. Because you've been working your whole life on becoming more and more conscious, and that desire to become fully conscious and aware is a classic signature of the full moon.
Okay, now another question. You said that my moon and my sun directly oppose each other.
Yes.
Would you call that natural-born bipolar?
One could say that oppositions would tend to make one oscillate between opposites, which some people might label bipolar, but the real work of any opposition, regardless of the planets and the sun and moon is particularly heavy duty, is to solely become oscillating so the two things that are opposing slowly come into a unity. And you have moon conjunct Uranus in your chart very tightly, and Uranus is the planet of synthesis. It's the things that polarize and start out as, you know, opposites attract, and they also repel. But then eventually they become to understand each other. And when they come to understand each other, they can reach a union and a synthesis. And from that synthesis, they can transcend themselves into a third thing called the syzygy in Jungian work, which you may be familiar with.
Yeah.
And so your Uranus-Moon conjunction says that, yes, you have an opposition, but your work in life is to bring that opposition into union by understanding the two sides of the equation until you get them to harmonize, balance, then make union with each other. And from that union comes a profound understanding that raises you to a whole new level of consciousness. And that's the work of any opposition. They're secretly each other.
Didn't mean to interrupt and throw you off of the main thing, but I just had to ask that question.
Well, was that clear for you? I mean, it may be a complicated concept for people not aware of Gestalt therapy, but here's the principle of Gestalt therapy, you know, working with the polarities until they collapse into union and create wholeness. When people come, that's the dialogue that goes on in Gestalt therapy, too.
Yes. Yes.
So please stop me and ask me to clarify at any time, because I know for the listeners out there, unless they're versed in astrology, some of these concepts are brand new.
And as I ask these questions, you know, I know nobody else out there was probably thinking, well, and maybe they were, you know, maybe they're born also with their moon directly opposing their sun, and you know, it could have been many people wondering about this. But I had asked this question of an astrologer before, and this person said, no, that doesn't have anything to do with it. And I couldn't help but wonder how that could be.
Excuse me, it doesn't have anything to do with what?
Bipolar-like symptoms, living that out in your life. And yet I have. I have never been, you know, medicated, but it is something. I've had large mood swings and, you know, times in my life.
That's the oscillation.
Times in my life when I was, you know, depressed, and then times in my life when I was very high, very up. So I know that my sun and moon opposition had to be affecting me like that.
Right, and I believe in the work I do, and other astrologers may agree or disagree with me, that the sun-moon relationship, for example, the fact that it's an opposition, a full moon, the sun-moon relationship in the chart is the major astrological aspect. Everything else dances around that, regardless, in my opinion. It's the building. It's the foundation on which everything else stands.
Okay. All right. So now, getting back to the moons, the phases of the moon, where you were.
Okay. How would you like me to do this? I can start out with just the moon phases as I understand them, You asked for definitions of terms, and in the process here, you know, we'll go through the moon phases, and we'll get some definitions of terms along with that. Okay? So I just want to start out with the phases of the moon. Most of the phases of the moon people are familiar with because you see them on the calendar. On every calendar, you'll see a little symbol for the new moon, the full moon, and each of the quarters, the first quarter and the last quarter.
Monica, hang on a second. Stop for a second. You're very garbled, and I'm not able to understand anything you're saying. If we've got an engineer listening...
Okay.
We've got a problem. I can't understand Monica. All right, we're back, guys. Sorry for that little technical difficulty. Monica, we're back on.
How's that sound
and
now to you?
I wasn't able to hear anything that you were saying, so I know you were talking about the phases of the moon, and so what I would like to do is just go over each phase.
Okay, let's pick it up where you last understood me, and I'll repeat from there.
Okay.
Okay. You asked me to cover the phases of the moon, and what I said was that the phases of the moon most people are familiar with are the ones they see on the calendar, which are the new moon, the first quarter, the full moon, the last quarter, and then it's new moon, first quarter, full moon, and last quarter, those four. That's what most people are familiar with because you see them on most calendars, not just astrological calendars, but you'll see them on most calendars marked out, or at least the new moon and the full moon will be put on a calendar. It's very common. And, of course, you can see that very clearly in the sky. Full moons are pretty obvious. So that's what most people are familiar with. And so the moon phases can be divided into four pieces, which I just named, those four, new moon, first quarter, full moon, and last quarter. And then they can be divided again. And the ones I usually do, some people get into fine print and divide them into 12 pieces, but I only divide them into eight. So here's the eight phases of the moon. I'll repeat this again. The new moon is from 0 degrees, that's a conjunction, to 45, with the moon being ahead of the sun at 45 degrees. Then it becomes a waxing crescent between 45 and 90 degrees. The first quarter is exactly 90 degrees, or a square, to 135 degrees. And then the gibbous moon, which is it looks like a pregnant moon because it's waxing. It's not full, but it's heading toward fullness. It's called the gibbous phase. And that's 135 degrees to 180 degrees. And the full moon is 180 degrees, the exact big full moon, to 225 degrees. And the next phase is the disseminating moon, when the moon starts to really shrink. That's 225 to 270. At 270, we get the last quarter. And from 270 to 315 is the last quarter. And then we have the dark of the moon, just before the new moon, which is known as the balsamic phase. And that's just exactly what it is. Balsamic vinegar, for example, the reason balsamic vinegar is called balsamic vinegar is it's made at the dark of the moon, about 3.5 days before the new moon, in that period of time, those last 3.5 days of the moon cycle. Because I've always had people ask me if there's any relation to balsamic vinegar, and yes, there is. They make the vinegar during the waning phase of the moon, in the balsamic phase of the moon. So I usually use eight because they're very useful, the eight phases of the moon. Are you there?
Hey guys, sorry about that one more time. We, for whatever reason, are having phone line issues that that the net runs through. So Monica, I've been talking to you, but you haven't heard anything I've been saying. So
I
said to you, why is it that gibbous is a real monumental time of the moon for me? What is it about gibbous? And then
okay.
I'd like to talk about
were you able to
phases.
Hear on air when I went through the 8 divisions of the sun moon cycle? Hello?
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 I can hear you, but I know you can't hear me.
Well, I do hear you.
Okay. I can hear you barely, but you're clear, but you're just faint.
Okay. I'm not sure what to do about this because we're not hearing each other. We've got an issue here. People
okay,
out there,
I can hear
you
now.
Hear us,
I can hear you now.
Okay, because we're talking over each other.
Yeah, I don't mean to do that.
Well, I don't know if there's anything we can do about it. We've got some sort of an issue going on here. So let me say what I said again. I was wondering about gibbous and then why that's important to me. And then I'd like to have you go through each of the phases of the moon, what it means to us.
Okay.
Monica?
Yes.
Are you?
Yes,
I'm waiting
here
for you to talk. Do you not
okay.
Hear
me?
Monica, we're back. Can you hear me? Hey, okay, guys out there in internet radio land, we're sorry for this. It's, you know, technology, and we're still in the shadow of Mercury. Monica, my God, do we need to talk about that? Is there something happening that we're not supposed to be talking about the phases of the moon?
I think we're having Mercury has gone direct, which it did on Monday night at 8:15 Mountain Daylight Time. But we're still in, Mercury's still in the shadow, even though it's turned direct. It's still in the shadow of where it was retrograde. It won't emerge from the shadow of its retrograde area until July 24th, and we're certainly having all the effects.
Well, you know, Monica, I think what might be important here is that, and I think this is a message from Spirit, Mercury has a profound effect on everything we do. And you had said to me, any planetary retrograde takes you from the external to the internal. I think we're supposed to talk to about that. I think we're supposed to do something on that before we get into the phases of the moon. So let's just go with the message that we're getting and let's do it.
Okay.
Let's talk right now about the last part of Mercury retrograde.
Okay, well, let's just pick it up where it is right now. Mercury, as I said, turned direct Monday night, the late night of the 9th. It was 7:15 Pacific Daylight Time, or Mountain Standard Time for you in Arizona. And it will take another until July 24 for Mercury to emerge from the shadow, meaning the area of the zodiac where it went back and forth and forward in retrograde motion and is now going forward again. And what it means practically is on the morning of the 10th of July, when Mercury had turned direct the evening before, everybody just suddenly got very active. And I was having a conversation today with people at various bookstores or where there's a lot, where there's been hardly any business. Business had been slow. Suddenly, Tuesday morning, July 10th, everything was busy. Everybody was in there. Everybody was doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's natural because when Mercury turns stationary direct and slowly starts to move forward, people have been sort of internal while it was retrograde, and now that it has turned direct, everybody said, well, you know, I've been wanting to do this, but I just didn't feel like it. But now I feel like it. So everybody gets into hustle and bustle and busyness and all sorts of people are eager to get going and be external. They want to communicate. They want to write. They want to be in public. They want to, you know, there's lots of commerce. And so a lot of people working in commerce like restaurants and bookstores and any place where you rely a lot on a lot of clientele, suddenly their stores have been busier. They've had more clientele. Things were quiet while Mercury was retrograde, and now that it's turned direct, their phones are ringing off the hook. People are showing up. You know, they're having just loads of business, which is quite normal.
I did notice that the business in our store increased this past week.
Yes. Yes. Because people have taken the time with Mercury retrograde to mull over their lives, realign their thinking with their true self, and they've now got that course correction, internal course correction, accomplished. And they want to go forward with their lives based on their new internal guidance.
Okay.
And so people are just eager to get out and do something or communicate, you know, communicate or do commerce or make connection, basically.
So if people didn't return your phone calls or didn't make decisions that you were wanting them to hurry up and make, they will do those things now.
Oh, yeah. There'll be people that you have been waiting to connect with, and they've just, it's like if you have been during the retrograde period, you try to phone them and they're out. They return your call and you're out, and you keep kind of, you know, missing each other like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, or you've left messages and they haven't returned your calls.
Right.
Now there'll be a burst of energy, and people will suddenly return your calls, you'll connect, You'll find yourself meeting people that you were, it was frustrating to try to find them during the retrograde period. Now you walk right into them.
Okay.
And so it's really kind of a wonderful time in the sense of this new burst of wanting to connect, wanting to communicate. And it even shows up here in the internet. We've, you know, we're trying out a new medium, you know, a coming medium, internet radio.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all sorts of learning how to do, how to connect. Just even tonight's problem, you had to reroute all the connections.
Right.
To make us clear. But everybody was eager to connect. You know, we kept persisting until we connected.
Yes.
And that would be Mercury going forward after a retrograde phase.
Okay.
Persistence.
I just felt like it was important. There must be somebody out there that needs to understand that people aren't communicating with them just because of what's going on. And not because they don't like you or, you know, aren't interested, don't want to return your call. They're not ignoring you. They just were doing something different. They couldn't get you.
That's right. Well, a lot of people were turned internal. As I said when I talked last week, I said Mercury retrograde is a marvelous time to do altered state work. And I found that last week where Mercury was direct, and especially the last 3 or 4 days of its retrograde period, I was so right-brained I could barely count. I mean, you know, it was getting absurd.
Yeah.
I couldn't, you know, like, what's a checkbook? How does one learn to count from 1 to 10? I mean, I was, you know, the left brain is what can count.
Yeah.
And I was going, what's numbers? What's counting? And I'm going, I know I can be right-brained, but this is absurd.
Yeah.
This need to process all this soul information that had came up, and I was in the right brain just feeling overwhelmed and needing to process. And I found I needed to take long naps because it was like, get me some sleep so this will process. And every time someone said to me something practical like, you know, you need to do the accounting on your checkbook right now, and I went, normally, even during a retrograde period, I could do that. And I went, what's a checkbook? What's addition? I mean, it did get almost hilariously absurd.
Yeah, yeah.
But like now, we're working on coming out of that, and we had. I want to make a personal comment here, if you don't mind. I've truly enjoyed this Mercury retrograde in Cancer. I've absolutely loved it because of. Talking about it last week, I've learned so much about Mercury retrograde during its retrograde phase that I never knew. So I'm learning how to use it, and I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah. Well, as you and I have talked through almost this whole retrograde for 2 weeks now, you and I have been talking, I believe it is, and the outcome of this retro for me has been shattering, literally. So I'm enjoying it also. I know just what you mean.
That's an interesting paradox of words there, juxtaposition of words. It's been shattering and you've enjoyed it.
Yes.
Would you care to elaborate?
Well, I've had some old belief systems that have been running that were really very deep-seated and not certainly things that I didn't know anything about, old issues that I, you know, I'm certainly not unconscious about, but maybe the last dregs of them, you know, the bottom, where it has its roots, have come up for me, and I've been shattering those patterns. And in that shattering has been grief and sickness in my body, a purging, a great purging, which hasn't left me feeling really good all the time, and at the same time knowing what's coming on the other side of it, I'm enjoying it immensely because I know I'm finally uprooting maybe some of the last of my stuff around my issues. How, you know, what's not to enjoy?
Well, you can feel the freedom coming.
I can.
Well, that, may I refer to your chart. Just
absolutely.
A quick reflection on this. And for the listeners, the Mercury turns stationary directed 2 degrees 33 minutes of Cancer, and you happen to have a natal Uranus at 2 degrees 33 minutes of Cancer. So Mercury stopped going retrograde and turned direct exactly on your natal Uranus. It's doing a pirouette right on your natal Uranus right now. And so what you've described is exactly that. It's stationed direct right on your Uranus, where you went down, broke up some patterns which were deeply embedded in your subconscious, and now with Mercury moving in direct motion forward over your Uranus, you're feeling that shattering, like you broke yourself out of chain, out of some shackles, I believe. And by breaking up those patterns, you're getting yourself free.
And you had said to me, time to get out of jail.
Yeah, and you're definitely getting out of jail. Does it feel that way to you?
Yeah, it does. It does. And I know that the folks out there listening might not, you know, they're probably thinking, well, what are we talking about here? Well, what does that mean? And, you know, and it's not something that I can, you know, over the Internet go into detail about, but it will suffice it to say that if we can go through our shadow selves and integrate that shadow with the light self, we find freedom. Oh, my goodness, we find freedom in our life. And, you know, a friend of mine said to me on the phone today, for me, everything's about freedom. I want to be free. I want to be able to go places when I want to go. I want my financial situation to be in such order that if I feel like, you know, booking off this next week for 4 days and hiking the Grand Canyon or going to California, I can do that. I want to be free. I want everything is about freedom. And that's what I want. Everything for me is about freedom. I want to be freedom. I want to be free of all of my old crap.
Well, this certainly is a time, given that the Mercury retrograde and stationary direct is transiting right over your Uranus, you're certainly getting your wish. You know, you're getting the freedom.
Good.
Because, as you said, you're getting broke free from very deep-seated emotional patterns.
Yes.
Which were so unconscious and so habitual to you that you didn't even know that you were in jail, you know, that you
were
restricted.
Well, I've been aware of them, you know. I mean, well, more than aware, they're issues that I have been, you know, working on. And I guess we could easily say to folks listening, financial fear, relationship stuff. You know, there are certainly issues that I've been working on for nearly as many years as I am old. Not quite, of course, but I think I began this work at about 21, 22 when I started reading Khalil Gibran, and that was kind of my awakening. And then I joined the Rosicrucians and began... I got my first tarot deck. So, you know, in my early 20s, I started on this path. But as you well know, Monica, it's a long dredge. And, you know, you can work on the same issues for 100 years and not get it all. You know, so many times I have people sit across my table from me and, you know, I will say to them, well, you need to do this and that. And they will say, oh, I've already done that. Well, okay, but when was the last time you did it, and how many times have you done it? Because it's time to do it again.
Well, that's the thing that brings up the important part. You brought up a very important point. When the person who sits across from you says, been there, done that, and I don't need to do that anymore,
mm-hmm.
They're thinking in linear time, you know, like straightforward. Today, yesterday's gone, today, and there's tomorrow. Time is a straight line. And astrology and other things in the chart work in cyclic time, which means there's always things recycle and come around again. And every time they come around again, you get a little bit more of what was there, because you can't get everything at one pass.
Right.
And so it recycles. And one of the biggest things that came up with the Mercury retrograde, since we're talking about that, was one of the biggest things to talk about Mercury retrograde, because when Mercury is retrograde, it's shifting us to right brain consciousness, and the right brain thinks in cycles. That's why it's important to learn the phases of the moon, because the moon is our calendar timekeeper for cycles. You know, it's easy in 1 month. And by the way, let me add a definition here. The word month is actually a contraction of the original Anglo-Saxon word moons, which means moon cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So moons, it means moon cycle, and that's where we get our word month from. That's the modern form. And so if you watch the moon wax and wane, you become very aware of cyclic time. And cyclic time is about things come, they go, and they come back again. And one of the biggest complaints I've heard from other astrologers, from transpersonal therapists of various types, is that the biggest challenge about time for people raised in a Western European-based culture and civilization is when you think of time as linear, you don't think as time, and time is actually cyclic. It spirals. It spirals. Actually, the straight line and the circle work together, creating a spiral. So when you go over, here comes that issue that you thought you were done with, it's recycled and come back to you again, and you think, I don't have to deal with that. I was there long ago, and I've worked it through, and I'm on. Well, you work through a stage of that.
But right.
Now it's time to take on another stage of that. And why do you want to? Because your evolution is a spiral. It's the combination, to put it bluntly, the left brain thinks in linear time and the right brain thinks in cycles. You put the two hemispheres of the brain together and you get a spiral. And that spiral is the spiral of evolution. And that's the wonderful thing about astrology, is it can work with both linear time and cyclic time together. Astrology as an art, because it's understanding of angles and geometry and placements and then the symbolic meaning of those placements, astrology as an art promotes left and right brain integration. It doesn't matter which type of astrology you do, Vedic, sidereal, tropical zodiac, whatever, it promotes right and left hemisphere of the brain integration, because it makes you think in both linear time and cyclic time simultaneously. So when you were saying to those people that come to you, and when you point out something, that this issue that they thought they were done with was back again, you can agree with them when they say, I did a big, heavy piece of work on that. You can say, yes, you did. But now it's come around for another piece of heavy work.
Yeah.
So there's more to it than what you saw the first time.
Right. And I've come across some of these pieces so many times, you know, just when I thought that I had dealt with all of the old family grief, I would have another episode of bronchitis. And we know that upper respiratory conditions are caused from old family grief.
That's right.
And, you know, so as many years as I worked on that and pulled away those layers, I still had more to go, and that became obvious with each time I would get, you know, another bout of an upper respiratory condition.
Well, the one other thing, too, when you have, as you do, a Moon-Uranus conjunction, I want to bring this up. Uranus is a transpersonal planet, which means it goes beyond just your personality and your personal grief, and this is for anyone, okay? When someone has a major aspect, as you do, between the Moon and Uranus, you're not just processing your personal grief. Yes, you have personal grief around your family issues, but you're also processing the grief and unshed tears of the entire clan. And you have Moon and Uranus in Cancer, which is the sign of the clan. So you're processing the unshed grief for people who couldn't cry, both horizontally and vertically in your own family. So your tears may not be only your tears. they are the collective grief of the entire clan that could not be expressed.
Hmm.
And you're set up in a position with this opposition, which makes you aware. It comes through you, so you're like the opening of the sluice gate on the dam that lets it out.
For those that are unable, for whatever reason, to do
right.
this work, just haven't evolved that far.
Okay, let me give you an example. This is a generic example, and this is for the people that are out there so that we can get something that's broad and other people who are listening here can listen, you know, can relate to.
Okay.
For example, if you were the child, you were a member of the Pluto and Leo generation, which was born during and right after World War II, that means you had parents who physically lived through World War II, one way or the other. Doesn't matter where they were in World War II, they lived through it on this planet.
Right.
If you had parents that were living in a place that was, you know, ground zero for World War II, like Europe or China, or any of the places where there was heavy fighting, and your family was dispersed as a refugee after the war, or you're the child of survivors of the concentration camps?
No, none of that. We were actually a Scotch-Irish and American Indian. So.
Right, but I'm just saying in general.
Oh, but if you did.
I'm saying
okay.
If you did. I'm speaking in general for the Pluto
okay.
and Leo generation.
Okay.
Because everyone in Pluto and Leo was from 1938 through 1956. So everyone born during that period, their parents went through World War II. So a lot of the parents who went through World War II, especially if they were from Germany itself, or from Russia, or from China, or from parts of Japan, or from any part of the world where there was active fighting, you know, ground zero fighting, these people, the parents, just had to survive. They were totally into survival. They couldn't even take time to cry. Because they didn't have time to cry. They just had to keep on living and surviving.
Right.
And so it's very interesting, the Pluto and Leo generation, who are the children of parents like this, and these are including people whose parents were concentration camp survivors. They had parents who would never talk about the experiences during the war. They would only tell their children, we don't think of that, we just keep living. And so their children would start saying, but we can feel it.
Yeah.
There's lots of unspoken grief and trauma here, and you're not talking about it. So their children ended up going into Gestalt therapy and all the transpersonal therapies that started in the 60s and are now flowering now, 40 years later.
Right.
And it was essentially the children had to talk about it, but the parents couldn't because they were just busy surviving.
Right. Right.
And but so the children ended up acting out. And this is the same, and this principle applies for any group of people, any parents. The child always lives in the world of his parents, inside it. And so the child will pick up things in the family that are unspoken. And this is regardless of generation. And the child will want to say, but we need to talk about this. And as you know, every family has a taboo. We don't talk about these things.
Right.
Or these things don't exist, whatever they are. So children live inside their parents' world, and they know about it. And then if they have a sensitive moon or have some other sensitive planet in the chart, then the children or the next generation processes what the generation before them can't deal with. They'll actively process it. And this can go on for generations, sometimes in certain families.
I would think the Jewish folk would have a lot of, well, and we used to call this solar astrology.
Yes.
When we took on the soul group's stuff, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So in my chart, it says that I have done this, correct? That I'm doing this.
Well, it says that you channel a lot of the emotions of the whole clan. It means a whole group of people that could not be just your parents. They can be your grandparents.
Right.
Your aunts and your uncles, your great-grandparents, your great-aunts and uncles. I'm just speaking in general. This
right.
also goes for other people who are listening. They, too, may be carrying burdens that are not personal, even though it's very personal how it affects them. They're doing a lot of work for the people who can't do the work. They either can't or won't. And usually when you're dealing with processing ancestral issues, you'll find that people were looking for a family member who could do the work. Someone in the family has to be the conduit to let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah.
And
must have been me in my family.
Well, in your case, yes, it looks like it was you. But I'm now speaking to the general audience that for other people who feel this way, you know, it's a position, it's kind of interesting. You feel odd or you feel like, why does everything affect me and everybody else is oblivious?
Yeah.
Or it doesn't get to them when it gets to me. And the reason it gets to you is you're the outlet. So I want to say to you and to other people out there that are similar, you know, you're in a very special position. And it gives you a lot, it gives you a special burden, but it also gives you a special privilege. And that privilege is you can heal things in a major way.
Well, let's get back to the phases of the moon. Maybe we've covered enough Mercury retrograde, and
I did kind of get into phases of the moon because I started talking about families. So, but we'll get back to the technical stuff. Like I said, the phases of the moon, it depends how you want to divide it. Like I said, your calendar, your average calendar gives you four, and it's the one that most people are familiar with. The new moon, the first quarter, the full moon, the last quarter, and it began back to the new moon again. So this is what most people see are the two quarters of the new and full moon. But those are the basic four. And then you can divide those four into eight by cutting the four in half. So it's like when you're cutting a pie. You cut it four slices, and then you cut those slices again and make eight.
Right.
And the phase of the moon that falls between the new moon and the first quarter is called the crescent. And all of us have seen that. It's the little crescent moon. It's like the moon you always draw when you're drawing the moon on a magician's hat or anything.
Yes,
when you make a moon symbol, that little moon symbol that you draw is the waxing crescent. And by the way, just for words here, the new moon to the full moon is a waxing moon, meaning it's growing, and from the full moon back again to the next new moon is the waning moon. For interest, it's interesting that if you cut your hair during the waxing of the moon between the new moon and the full moon, it will grow back faster. If
really?
You cut your hair between the full moon back to the dark of the moon, it will grow back slower.
Wow.
That's just a fact.
So I want to cut my hair before the full moon.
Yes, if you want it to grow back faster and thicker, do that. If you wanted to not have to get your hair cut as often, cut it after the full moon, but before the next new moon.
That's a fun thing to know.
Yes, because the moon, the sun-moon relationship regulates growth and cycles of growth on this planet.
All right.
And it's just one of the fun things you can find. That's why you can go up, look at the Farmer's Almanac, and it'll tell you what to plant by the phases of the moon. That's why.
Mm-hmm.
It's because over centuries, people have noticed that if you plant certain crops at certain times, they do better or worse. And so that's why old Farmer's Almanac, you'll have the moon phases out, when to do something. The same when you want to cut wood. If you cut wood at the waning of the moon, the sap will be drier, and the wood will season better. If you cut a tree at the waxing of the moon, there's more sap in it, and it will tend not to season as well. It tends to rot more.
Interesting.
Yeah. So We've got away from that because we don't have a society here in the United States, most of North America, U.S. and Canada, that is in agriculture or rural as it used to be. And when people had to plant gardens and were more rural, they paid attention to this, you know, a little more, because it was just plain practical. If you wanted your wood to dry so that it stayed seasoned and dry, you tended to wait to a certain phase of the moon because you knew you got higher quality. And people were very much aware of that. So I'm just giving you a little tidbits how the moon regulates growth, which actually will work.
So one of my questions to you before, when we were doing all of the technology issues there, gibbous moon. Why does gibbous affect people? What's going on when
okay,
the moon is gibbous?
We've got the crescent, which is between the new moon and the first quarter. Then the gibbous moon is between the first quarter and the full moon. It's right in between. It's when you see the moon is almost full, but it isn't quite. But it looks pregnant, you know, it's getting bigger and bigger. That's the gibbous moon. The gibbous moon is about, it's about growing. It's about ingathering of information. It's about ingathering of information. Let's see. It becomes full. When the gibbous looks like the first quarter, but it starts rounding out like a bloated stomach or a full stomach,
mm-hmm.
The energy of the gibbous is to gather more. And the idea is you keep, you know, like you're on a road to get something and you just want more information. You want more and more, and it's never enough. It's always gathering up. And what it is that the gibbous moon, a direction has been chosen, and now one must travel this direction in order to learn all about it. So anyone with a gibbous moon is eagerly gathering more of whatever they're interested in. They never can have enough of whatever they're genuinely interested in. There's always more to know, more to learn, more to have. But that's the key word. They're always interested in finding out more about whatever interests them a great deal. And there's, quote, never enough. Because there's always more to have, more to know. Did that answer your question about gibbous,
yes.
Or did I miss it?
Nope, you got it. Absolutely.
There's this urge, you know, just to get it all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the new moon is when the moon is dark, and you probably can't even see the moon. When you go to the dark of the moon, it's out there, but, you know, you just can't really see it because the sun and the moon are conjunct and there's hardly any light. And the new moon is always the beginning of a new cycle of experience. The thing I noticed that's really interesting, the full moon is the climax of the cycle. So the two polarities of the moon cycle are the new moon and the full moon. And what I've noticed is if you meet anyone who's born between the new moon and the full moon, they tend to be very subjective people. And people born from the full moon back to the balsamic or darker the moon phase tend to be more objective. And let me give you my very homely and cliched example. People born between the new moon and full moon will say, peas are bad. And if you ask them, why are peas bad? They'll say, peas are bad because I don't like them. That's why they're bad. I don't like them. If you pose the same question to a person born at the full moon, back to the balsamic phase of the moon, and they say peas are, you know, they tell you peas are bad, and you ask them the same question, how come peas are bad? They'll say, well, peas are bad for me because I can't digest them. Now, someone else could digest them, but I can't digest them. So peas are bad for me because I can't digest them. Do you hear the difference between subjectivity and objectivity?
Uh-huh, absolutely.
Now, this is a general trend, and, of course, there's other things in the chart that offset it, but it's one of the things that I will immediately, when I look at a chart, I'll look to see whether they were born before or after the full moon, because it gives me a cast of subjectivity or a cast of objectivity, depending on the person. And so it's the way I'm going to see their process experience. And that's another reason I really think the sun-moon phase is the bedrock of any interpretation. We've gotten to the gibbous, and I was going to go into the full moon. As I said, the full moon itself is the culmination of the sun-moon cycle, and of course, the sun and moon are directly opposite, and you know if you get a beautiful full moon, it's almost like being out in daylight at night.
Yeah.
It's that bright.
Yeah.
And sometimes you also notice that you're very energized at the full moon.
Yeah.
You can't sleep that well. And it's famous in law enforcement and hospitals in emergency rooms that every time it turns out to be the full moon, all hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
You know, something always happens on a full moon. In fact, I found an interesting fact on the Internet that the police department of Brighton Hove in England has decided, after years of research, they're going to add extra police on the streets during the full moon, because they found by a study that the crime rate in Brighton Hove, which are two cities side by side, always peaks at the full moon. And they got commentary from the police department. There was a man who was a 25-year veteran of being a policeman in Brighton Hove, England, and he said, thank God we're finally getting more people, you know, doubling the force at the full moon period. He said, I've been on here on the force all these years, and we always got inundated with fist fights and calls, and we simply never had enough people to deal with it. So now,
yeah, and I understand that there are more suicides, and also people become more depressed.
Yes, there's more. I think what happens at the full moon, the meaning of the full moon is awareness, and it's coming into a form, and it's full illumination because the light shines on whatever's been going on. And if people interpret what they're seeing in a negative way, like I see clearly now, and my wife's a mess, and that makes me unhappy. You know, and unhappy
right.
enough to say, there's nothing I can do about it, I think I'd better check out of here. But the main reason of a full moon is about trying to find out to become fully conscious and see what the lunation cycle is about. What have you been working on? Because of the new moon, every human being, we have 13 new moons a year, and every time we have a new moon, it's a new beginning. So you start out very subjectively, like you're working on something, and you're getting new information and new ideas. And by the time you get to the full moon, what was just kind of a tickle in the back of your brain at the new moon is now fully conscious, and you can say, I see clearly. And the point of the full moon is to just give you more consciousness so you can understand what you're working with. But a lot of people, that energy comes in and they become conscious of something that is very uncomfortable for them, that they don't like, and they don't know how to process it, and they may feel despair. For example, if we were talking earlier about certain patterns in their life come up and they're conscious and they're saying, I'm tired of being stuck in this pattern and I don't know any way out except to, you know, be very angry and act out in rage, or maybe to commit suicide if they feel there's no choice. And so the full moon is a very volatile time. And, of course, it's famous because, you know what, the full moon is when the werewolf comes out.
Yeah.
I'm
born in the full moon.
Right. Well, all these things, you know, these stories, werewolf, of course, means man-wolf, because were is the old Anglo-Saxon word for mankind. And so it's about all these instincts come out in rage without any check and balance with them, because all this stuff has come up. And so there's all sorts of stories about this. In fact, there's stories about lunacy. The very word lunacy deals with the moon cycles, and it deals with the fact that it is true in mental hospitals and clinics during the full moon, people who are in mental asylums tend to get very agitated. That's why the word lunacy was used to really believe that emotional and mental illnesses was caused by the full moon or by the phases of the moon, particularly the full moon. And it has to do with, on a very basic level, I think it's the fact that it's an interesting fact that the moon is 1/6 the size of the Earth. And so the moon is literally the fifth largest satellite around any planet in our solar system. And as you know, the full moon creates high tide.
Yes.
And the full moon, our bodies are 70 to 80% water. And so the full moon also creates a high tide in our physical bodies. And that high tide in our physical bodies, the pressure of the gravity of that high tide in our physical bodies, it's very subtle, but it creates pressure on the body that puts pressure on the nervous system. And it creates and puts pressure on the endocrine glands. So it tends to push you into mental states. It's like the pressure just gets to you. Your nervous system goes, I can't take it anymore. And it's all very subtle, but this has been studied, that we literally have, our bodies have tidal waves in them too, simply because we're made of water. It's very subtle, but we do.
Right.
And so once you get to the full moon, it's supposed to give you the full illumination, the revelation of consciousness. That's why a lot of esoteric schools promote meditations on the full moon, is because it's supposed to help you become greater consciousness. And the phase right after the full moon, by the way, the full moon lasts 3 days. The day before the exact full moon, the day of the exact full moon, and the day after. That full moon period is 3 days. And then the 3 days following that three-day full moon period, there's a huge plateau of high awareness. For about 3 days afterwards, like you've hit a plateau of consciousness, and now you just coast on autopilot for a while, for 3 days. And it's interesting, the most powerful revelations in one's life don't come exactly at the full moon. They come in the 3 days after the full moon period. And that coincides with the area that is known as the disseminating moon phase. And the disseminating moon is just the opposite. It's the mirror opposite of the gibbous moon. And the moon is waning. And so now you have all this knowledge that you gathered as a gibbous person. You gathered all this knowledge as a gibbous phase. You became conscious of what it all meant at the full moon. And now at the disseminating moon, you want to give it away. You have all this knowledge. And these people have, they must share their knowledge. These are the people who, the people born at the disseminating phase of the moon are people who, once they learn something, they have to run out and tell you all about it. They're the people who are always learning something so they can tell you about it. Disseminating phase people are compulsive teachers and newscasters. If they know something, they broadcast it. Because it's like we've got to release it. And finally, when you get to the last quarter of the moon, again, you have a square between the sun and moon facing in the opposite direction from the first quarter. But the difference is, at the first quarter, you make a choice about, with this new energy of the new beginning, which way am I going to go? At the first quarter of the moon, it's a choice of direction. Do I do this or do I do that? I've got to choose. I can't have both. I have to choose one or the other, and then once I've chosen, I follow that line of choice. At the last quarter of the moon, it's not a choice in action or direction. It's a choice in consciousness, because you come again and say, well, I've learned all these things, and I've tried to share all my information, and now I realize what I know and what I don't know, and I have to make an adjustment in my understanding. So it's called a crisis in consciousness, the last quarter, and it's about a crisis in mental and emotional and spiritual comprehension. And then you make a shift in understanding. And that consciousness shift in understanding at the last quarter leads one to the last phase of the moon before we go back to the new moon, which is called the bosemic phase. Now, the bosemic phase is, the moon is that crescent, just like, you know, the waxing crescent that you draw as a glyph for the moon.
Right.
But it's in the opposite direction. So it's almost the complete dark of the moon. It's going into the dark of the moon. And when
is
you
that
see the
void of course?
No.
Okay.
Void of course means that the moon is not made any aspect to any planet in the chart. The balsamic moon is just something you can go outside and watch. About 3.5 days before the new moon, when it's the dark of the moon, that's the balsamic phase. And the balsamic phase is that awareness that this cycle, this moon cycle, or this moon is over, and the new moon is about to come. And the closest thing I can give you to give you the consciousness of a balsamic moon is it's the eve of the new day. It's like Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve, Halloween Eve. It's not the day of the big holiday, but it's the evening before, or the eve before your marriage, or the evening before a funeral. It's that moment when you're on the threshold of something brand new or a big event. That's what a balsamic moon is like. It's not the event itself, but when you're standing on the threshold of that event.
Okay.
And the balsamic moon, this dark of the moon phase, is before the new moon, this 3.5 days before the new moon, is a day of incredible clarity. I told you that before, between the full moon and the next new moon is the most objective awareness and objective consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the balsamic moon is the most objective consciousness of all. If you want to have someone get a hold of any person born at the balsamic phase of the moon, and they will be able to look at you and say, I think I could tell you exactly what's going on. I see clearly what's happening. So balsamic moon people are famous for their insight and their prophetic ability. They can literally see around corners. And they have such objective clarity. They're the heights of objective clarity. It's scary. I've been around a number of balsamic people. You can be in an emotional muddle, and a balsamic person will come along and say, I can really see clearly what's going on, and they will tell you quite concisely what's going on. If you go on in this direction, in this muddle, this and this are going to happen. So the balsamic moon is known as the sign of the prophet.
The sign of the prophet?
Yeah, because they can see the future that's taking shape. They can see, you know, if you continue in this direction, in this way, this is what's going to be the result of that action. They have incredible objective clarity.
Okay.
Please ask me any questions or anything.
Well, you're such a good, you are like an encyclopedia. So as I think of a question, you just kind of start talking about it. So I was trying to understand void, of course, and how that was different than... Then,
void of course
dark of the moon.
Simply means the moon moves so fast that the moon will make an aspect to any planet over the course of the day when it cycles around the Earth. Like, let's say, for example, the moon squares the sun or the moon conjuncts Mercury. That's an astrological aspect. Finally, when the moon has been going around and interacting with the different planets in the sky, it doesn't have any planet to make a connection to, an astrological aspect, which is actually a geometric relationship of so many degrees. Suddenly, it just doesn't have anything to contact. It's an empty space. That's why it's called void, of course.
Okay.
And
I want to let everybody out there know that when we're finished this evening with Monica, we're going to be calling Dr. Sandra Rose Michael and Dr. Greg Gerber, and we're going to be talking about 7707 and what happened in Texas, and of course the scalar energy, and we'll be covering some new case histories. Good stuff, guys. If you want to know how to heal your body, that's what we do a show about. We look at all the different aspects: the physical, the mental, the emotional. We try to do something that covers each and every one of those. So we will be going to break in about 5 minutes. We'll be saying goodbye to Monica. We're going to bring her back on the 25th, and we'll be talking about what is to be coming in the next month. She's going to not only come back on and give us our next lesson in astrology, but we're going to be looking at the up-and-coming months and what we're going to be dealing with. And I'll tell you, I really look forward to doing this show with Monica because we will be talking about many interesting subjects like the Black Madonna. And when Halloween comes, we're going to do a show on Halloween. Oh, Monica, we have good stuff to talk about, don't we?
We certainly do. And I'm certain we'll cook up more.
I'm sure we will. We only have, you know, about 5 minutes of this section of the show, this segment, and we can't really get into, I think, didn't we want to talk about the planets next?
Yes, we wanted to talk about some definition of terms, but I think we've given people a lot to think about.
Yeah, so we'll wait to start that next phase of our show, and I'll get this up on my website, people. It's www.drrainmorgan.com. And Monica, give your information again. And Monica, my understanding is you're $125 for a session, a private session. You work the chart and give a reading, correct?
Well, I work the chart and give a reading. Right now, my standard rates are $75 for the first hour and $70 for the following hour.
Okay.
At this time, and it depends what people want to do. They can certainly call me, and we can set up a session, and I will simply interview them. I like to have people call me at the number I'm going to give out, and I do an intake interview. That's so I know what they need and how we can go best about it. At this time, my phone number to contact me on is area code 303-665-4675. And again, my website to contact me on email is thesabian@webtv.net, and I'll spell that for you. Thesabian is T-H-E, capital S-A-B-I-A-N, the app sign, webtv.net. And when you do phone, if you don't get me on the answering machine for that number, 303-665-4675, please leave as much information about your date, place, and time of birth, because I need to do a natal chart before I can do anything else.
Okay.
I can't think of anything else to say at this moment.
Well, I want to thank you so very much, and I'm trusting that our engineers are listening, and we'll say goodbye to you and welcome you back on the 25th.
Yeah,
and
thank you. I'll be happy to be back on the 25th.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Monica, and you have a great evening. Thank you for coming on and giving such a great show with us tonight. And we'll take a little break right now, and we'll get Dr. Greg, and we'll get Dr. Sandra Rose on the line, okay?
Well,
so,
good night.
Good night, Monica.
Good night.
BBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, information and knowledge, bringing humanity closer to truth. BBSRadio.com.
in the middle of the day, there's a blind spot in the middle of my prayer. Are you out there? So much noise in the world today, I can't even find my baby. Are you out there?
In Texas, we're going to be talking about some new case histories, so I think you'll find this very interesting. Good evening, Sandra Rose.
Hey, aloha.
And good evening,
back
Dr. Greg.
Hello, hello, hello.
How are you guys? How are things going?
Gosh, we had an awesome event that 777. It was a true launch, starting with they ran a full sequence from NASA footage of an actual launch, but what ended up being very synchronous was I talked about later how the medical director for NASA called while they were doing the footage of the NASA astronaut launch, and so we had them on and talked about the that connection and what spiritual or inspired networking really is.
Yeah.
But Greg was there, and Greg, you want to talk about the launch?
Oh, we had an absolutely marvelous time. We were over with the folks from IAB, and we did the Freedom for Life launch of the new program offered by IAB.
I'm glad you said that, Greg, because I was just about to say, we better tell people what we launched.
Yeah, it's called Freedom for Life, and it really is an awesome program for creating freedom for life with IAB, which has been a 25-year-old health benefits program, but a lot of benefits to it. And it's just the perfect timing for this launch with, you know, really meeting the needs and supporting the needs for those of us that want to create the wellness revolution. So we are now officially, at this point, part of the Medical Advisory Board for the wellness program for Freedom for Life.
Freedom for Life is what I would term a co-op type of insurance company or insurance program, if you will, that allows you to enjoy the benefits of alternative healing as well as allopathic medicine. And I would say from my point, my vantage point of looking at this program, it is the most affordable insurance that I have ever seen. To join the program, the co-op, if you will, and I like that word, co-op. I don't know how you two feel about that, but it feels better to me to call it a co-op than it does to call it a multi-level marketing. It has
it's kind of a multi-level marketing, but not really anyway, because it's the way it's a membership for supporting the members and being able to have phenomenal benefits and also to be able to have freedom for life for having healthy choices, but also freedom for life financially.
Right. So I just like the way co-op sounds, because there's been, back in the days, there was a lot with the multi-level, and I think joining and supporting people, like you said, you know, making it possible for other people to have insurance through joining this. But I looked at this as one of the most affordable health care packages, because for $100 I can join, and for $49 a month I can get tremendous benefits. And it doesn't just take in a trip to the emergency room, should someone ever need that, but there's a lot of other things to it. Travel and car rentals, and there are many, many benefits to this program.
Yeah. Like I said, it is a membership program, but there is also the insurance aspect for the people that have been uninsured for one reason or another, whether we were in the entrepreneurs and really taking responsibility for our own health. We may not have wanted to buy into the whole health insurance program that's been so costly, but also they've created a lot of exclusion in their benefits as far as not covering people. So you have the people that haven't been insured because of financial reasons or spiritual reasons, or also because the exclusions of people that were uninsurable because of their other health problems. Well, there is no exclusion with this. Inclusive.
Yeah. So this program won't rule you out for a previously existing issue.
Not at all.
That's really phenomenal that way.
Yeah, so it doesn't turn, nobody is turned down, and the benefits are for all of the members. And James Wood, who started, has been in insurance for, I think it's like 35 years. He really knows it inside out, actually about 40 years. Knows it inside out backwards, and this company has been running for 25 years very successfully, and they really know what they're doing. They're a very successful program, and now they're very excited about really supporting the members in having even more choices that support wellness and really kind of following, like, I think we talked about this, that model of kind of like AARP, how that insurance program, and look how huge it's gone as far as the benefits and the protection that it's given the members. For protecting their rights, creating a real presence, a tremendous presence, a lobby for protecting the rights of those members. So it's a really phenomenal thing. So we want to do that with the wellness industry. Good for the practitioners and good for the
industry. Yeah, it's about time to have a health program that everyone can afford to get into and get the care in whatever direction they want to go in. My daughter was telling me that if her husband was to leave his company, that their insurance through Blue Shield Blue Cross to cover their family would be somewhere around $800 a month, because, you know, she's still a childbearing age. And, you know, not a whole lot of couples in their 30s with small children can afford $800 a month to cover their family.
Yeah.
That's just
outrageous. And that is part of this mission statement of the company, to bring benefits and educate the benefits to families. So it does provide benefits, like the premium level, what they call Platinum Plus, is $299 a month. And James Wittig explained to me how, however many, we had been told that it was like up to 10, legal dependents. Well, he said it's not really limited to 10. It's phenomenal coverage and benefits. Greg? That's Greg Gerber, as medical director of the Memorial Hospital System. But we introduced him there to speak. Greg's been medical director for 7 hospitals. He's a medical director currently for 7 hospitals. He just opened his 8th one. And so he's seen everything in the health industry. And he's made some really excellent points.
Well, it is an absolutely delightful program that's going to allow people to have tremendous choices in their life. They're going to be able to provide the opportunity to decide if they're going to use regular doctors, which are known as allopaths, or whether they're going to use other types of health care providers to provide their medical care. Should this be a chiropractic and an osteopathic doctor? Individuals are interested in providing care at all levels of intervention and allowing folks to make the choices they need to and are interested in having with regard to who's going to be providing their health care. And this is just an absolutely new, absolutely, totally, totally outrageously different program that is going to allow people to make the choices they want. As we know, most people right now are having the opportunity to utilize their own cash to make this decision. But right now, through a new program, through the Freedom for Life, people are going to be able to choose to use an insurance program to use alternative providers for their health care. It's just exceptionally exciting.
Yeah.
What about?
It is rather exciting. I mean, there's insured medical benefits, but there's also the support for, and to me, empowerment is making healthier choices. There's the support for people being able to make healthier and healthier choices, and those being covered as a wellness program.
And what about deductibles? We hear so much about, I have to use up my $500 deductible or my $1,000 deductible. How does that work with Freedom for Life?
Greg, do you want to answer that one?
Well, it depends on how someone chooses to use their benefits. You have benefits which will allow you to see health care providers with a set fee for reimbursement that will come not directly as a deductible. Now, you can utilize providers, and they do have a preferred provider network of allopathic doctors, and most of those come from the Beach Street Network. And indeed, if you choose to use those types of providers, there is a very, very discounted fee involved for the individual. And in addition to that, after you've seen a physician who may charge you $100 or $200, let's say $200 for a visit, if indeed it is one of their preferred providers, you'll find that instead of starting at $200 expense, you'll have a discounted fee perhaps of $110, which that provider has agreed to be their set price. Thereafter, once you have that service provided and you have reimbursed your provider provider. Then you provide that information to the network, and the network will likely reimburse you close to $50 a visit. So rather than paying $200 as the initial fee, you're down to $110, less the $50, and you're paying $60 for an outpatient visit. And there are further discounts if there are indeed services that need to be rendered by that provider if they are indeed done within the network. Sandra, how'd I do on explaining?
There's a lot of other benefits, too, like the dental services, the cleaning for each and every member of the family per year, things like that. It's just a good program. There's insurance benefits, and then there's savings programs, and there's also tax assistance, identity theft protection, and roadside assistance, emergency medical travel,
go from there. So So, Dr. Greg, this is like a regular insurance policy, only not.
That's correct. It's a like a regular insurance policy. However, it is not. It is not a classical hospitalization program. There are benefits for coverage for hospitalization, but it is not a classic hospitalization policy. So that it is a supplemental insurance program.
Okay. Yeah, it provides members benefits. And, you know, so it's providing a whole plethora of benefits, and that's what they're looking at, increasing the value of the benefits to the members. And so it's really a membership program. And then as members of this association, and that is literally set up as an association to the benefit of the members, and all the members have a coverage and the benefits and cannot be turned down. And
but
then they're literally advocates for your rights.
But you would still need to carry a regular insurance policy to cover hospitalization, surgery, that sort of thing.
The answer to that is yes and no, but the classic answer to that would be yes. This is not to replace a classical hospitalization program. This is a supplemental program rather than a general hospitalization program. That is correct, Rain.
Yeah, people may still want to carry their basic medical insurance if that's, you know, what they choose to do. Now, personally, I'd rather take that $600, $900 a month and put it into eating organically. And
yeah, nutrition.
Yeah, and as I call health assurance rather than insurance, let's really invest in our own health and be the ones that are making those choices. And then this is a really awesome supplemental benefit program that, you know, has all kinds of lifestyle benefits and then the support and advocacy for supporting healthy options, you know, at the same time as covering emergencies that might come up as far as accident insurance, and it pays $1,000 a day if somebody goes into the hospital, that kind of thing.
$1,000 a day is the maximum coverage. There's ICU type of coverage available, people at that same level, depending on the level at which you come in for this benefit. But it is indeed a supplemental program that will cover hospitalization items depending on that level of care which you or benefit which you require during the course of the hospitalization.
Yeah. One neat thing that I thought was rather impressive, they have an interesting program called Telemed. You know, so it's like, you know, call up a doc. And you can talk to people 24/7 within 10 minutes, a qualified physician. And that is going to be free for the members. Right now it's $35 for a call, but they have made arrangements for that to be a free service for the members, which is pretty phenomenal.
And basically those individuals who are receiving those calls are licensed physicians throughout the United States. Who will be licensed in your area, and as they get your medical history and discern the information, you give them your classical symptom complex. Now, granted, they will not be doing hands-on examination of you, so they'll be dependent upon the historical information which you provide. But say you're traveling and having difficulty getting hold of your local physician, or perhaps he's not in the same state that you are in, by calling in to the telemedicine component of the IABFFL, you're going to be able to get a physician to call you back. I think they gave themselves a three-hour time period, but as you said, Sandra, most of these are being responded to in 10 minutes or less. You'll have
that's
a physician
the story
on the
we
line.
Heard over and over.
And these fellas will be able to, if you need some type of intervention, if you need a prescription for antibiotics, or at least you'll get a chance to talk to a doc to find out if indeed you're going to need someone to actually physically see you. But most times it's being able to have someone readily able to make some diagnosis, make some direct prescriptions and recommendations for you right then and there.
Yeah,
it's just a phenomenal program with regard to responses.
you know, as a mother, I think it's really, really significant as far as rather than packing your child up, you know, because you don't know what's going on, packing the child up and taking it to an emergency room because, you know, you can't get into the position and or you know, going to the doctor's waiting office and all that, just to make a call first, you know, and be able to get, you know, really qualified answers quickly. I wish you were there, Crane. It was a good party.
I know, I would have been there too.
But no, I have to be here at home detoxing. So that's a great thing.
It is a great thing. It's a hard thing. It's just a rough time for me. We were just talking about taking that extra $1,500 and putting it in being live and raw and organic. And, you know, I have recently made this switch to, you know, eating this way. And I think that might be something that talk about Sandra is making that switch and how to feel what it does to your body, but what it wards off in the years to come. So, yeah, and of course, again, that's just real empowerment that we are going to talk for our health. And the doctors have not been trained in this. They haven't been really trained in this. Now, that's our responsibility. With our own choices, our lifestyle choices, and then this is a great program of benefits because it'll cover acupuncture and chiropractic and well care, you know, your healthy care, you know.
Yeah.
So maintaining more and more optimal health. We put a lot in motion with the company as far as, you know, putting plans in place where we want to go with them. Wellness revolution.
You know, I have a question for Dr. Greg. Allopathic MD. I'm dealing with a couple of clients myself right now that one woman has been given just a couple of months to live. One of the things that I have noticed over time is that when someone who is ill goes to an allopathic doctor, Greg, tell me, why is it that one of the first things that allopathic medicine does not do is to look at that person's diet, their nutritional problem issues, and the issue behind, you know, whatever it is? Someone with cancer, that's a wasting disease. Someone that has a lack of self-esteem and hates life and heart problems of anger issues. Why isn't allopathic medicine dealing with that?
Well, very simply, they aren't trained in that manner. They are trained from an entirely different perspective, and their perspective is but for want of a better term, we believe taking a history from their patient that gives them information to allow them to make a diagnosis. And in that diagnosis, they are not using the full aspect of knowing the patient. We are trained at this point in time as regular doctors to listen to our patients, talk to us, give them their symptom complex, and then we're going to figure out what type of disease process this is. And we're coming from the germ theory, basically, that if indeed there is something in the body that is amiss, that we are to figure out a way to remove that from the body or to fight that. Now, that is one concept that is far from the natural medicine concept of looking at someone who has something awry in the body and looking at it from an energetic perspective and saying, oh my goodness, this energy is either locked in the body or there's something that is not in balance with the body. And so the allopathic physician looks at it as something to fight. And so after an attack, whereas from the natural medicine perspective, we would be looking at that to say, this is an energy imbalance that needs to be brought back into what's called balance or homeostasis. So if you're looking at it as something to fight, well, we're going to look at a bug and say, stomp it out. Or we're going to look at something that's in the body that shouldn't be in the body, and we're going to cut it out. So that's what we're trained to do as regular doctors or allopathic physicians. Whereas if you're looking at it from an energetic perspective, you're saying, oh my goodness, this is an energy blockage. That's all it is, an energy blockage, and we're trying to bring it back to balance. It's not good, it's not bad, it's a blockage. And we're not going to go in and try and take an antibiotic, which is going to kill something that's not supposed to be in the body. Whereas with the balancing perspective energy medicine, we're saying, oh, we're going to remove that blockage and make the body heal itself through itself. The energy that creates the body heals the body from an energetic perspective and a non-allopathic. So they just come in with an entirely different viewpoint, and that's how we're trained in medical school.
Well, nutrition has not been really taught medical school. It took an act of Congress to get, 3 hours mandated into the medical program because it's been pharmaceutically controlled educationally. So the nutritional part of how you create health, they have not in their traditional medical training. You can't expect the doctors to know it when they were not required to study it even. So they're not going to ask, they're not going to be looking at the nutritional deficiencies or inadequacies in the body, or even what the diet has been and what it's produced. They're looking more and more at it now, but that has not been.
Does that somewhat answer your question, Randy?
Yeah, sure. I really wanted to talk about that because, it's so up and coming now. I know many people feel that the AMA and the FDA are greatly failing us. And I think another thing that I would ask you, Greg, is what triggered in you that made you want to open yourself up to the naturopathic medicine?
Well, it was a backdoor into non-allopathic medicine and alternative medicine that happened back in the 1980s. I had an opportunity to meet a fellow by the name of Jose Silva, and he ran the Silva Method out of Laredo, Texas. And I was in Houston, and I came to his attention, and he came to my attention, and he taught me many, many skill sets that were not going to be presented to me in a regular medical curriculum. And as a consequence of that, I started to look at people and the people that I was serving, not so much as the biochemical nuts and bolts that I was taught in medical school, but I learned to look at them as energetic beings. If we're all just energy, here, for having some, usually those that came to my attention and who were in the medical model, who had had some type of imbalance. And he was, that was what switched me from adding to my classical curriculum. And I always, as a consequence of that, realized that there were different issues involved in addition to whatever symptom complex somebody had, that there was also, on top of that, an energetic element as well as a psychological element to their disease process.
Okay. I think it's so missing. And I think that with all that's going on out there, I would think that the medical schools would begin some point here, saying we really have got to address the fact that food is the cause of all of this. I have gotten such an education in getting on the Sunrider foods. I've been on Sunrider for 2 months now, and that is what has caused me or allowed me, prompted me, pushed me to make the transition to, you know, a vegan diet. And, you know, in the training classes, Dr. Chen talks about how, you know, every illness that the human body gets is the body trying to find a way to deal with what is being put in it. Tumors, cancers, diabetes, it's the body's way of finding a way to survive under, you know, what it's being fed.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rain, I want to give you some news that I think is wonderful news. Starting in 2008, the medical students now are going to be required by the medical boards and the associations and governing boards to include a portion of their education equal to that offered and presented with regard to biochemistry and pharmacology, with regard to teaching nutrition and wellness.
Right.
Now, this is a really, really exciting change in American medicine. We are finally going to be seeing our physicians who are coming out. Now, they may not get out into practice until 2011 or thereabouts, but nonetheless, they're going to start getting education with regard to nutrition and wellness. Now, my caveat to that, or my concern with regard to that, is who is indeed going to be teaching the elements of wellness and nutrition to these new young minds. Do understand that the physicians who are out there are wonderful people, out there for all the right people, doing their best to serve, but they just truly didn't have presented in their education component those elements which we now recognize and were intuitively obvious at the time, but were not included as their curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's really, I want to want you to understand that these fellows who are out there and are functioning as your local medical doctors and out there as your specialists, these are good people. They just plain didn't have this information presented to them while they did their training, and quite frankly, it hasn't really been endorsed, as you have said, by the governing body,
right,
but now is being recognized by the man, by the American public, that we need to learn more about how to take care of ourselves and what might be considered radical self-care and other elements so that people can better take care of themselves and do things towards their own well-being.
Right. I think that first-year med school ought to be, you know, something in nutritional chemistry and perhaps herbology and, you know, how to grow your own organic vegetables. And, you know, it amazes me how, you know, someone will go to the allopathic physician, and I know that they're not taught to do this differently, but, you know, they go in, their sugar tests real high, so the first thing that we do is we put them on insulin. Instead of saying, you know, okay, give me a week's worth of diet here. What are you eating every day? And then, you know, let's change that all around. Let's get you completely off of probably 90% of what you're eating, and let's get you on, like Dr. Gabriel Cousins. You know, Dr. Sandra knows Gabriel very well. And,
yeah,
you know, he literally, and we're not even supposed to use the word cure, but I'm not an MD, so I can. You know, but we can literally cure diabetes just by eating.
He's done a phenomenal program, all documented, that he calls Diabetes Free for Life.
Right.
And so, you know, and there's been a wonderful documentary even that's been filmed there. And, you know, you're in the Phoenix area. He's down in Patagonia.
Yeah. And he's going to be coming on our show. We're working at getting him on, but I believe he's traveling right now. So he will be coming on, and we'll be talking more about, you know, literally how to just not be diabetic anymore.
Exciting note on that is my dear good friend, and Greg has met her also, Dr. Rima LeBeau. She's MD, but she's been doing a lot of the work for people behind the scenes on Codex. Now, she is going to be in both the Phoenix and Patagonia area and would love to have her on the show as well. You know, and her husband is a retired Major General Bert Stubblebine, and they have basically created a strategy since he was a real strategist for the military. And in intelligence, they've created a strategy for going up against protecting our rights, maintaining our freedoms of choice and our rights in the face of Codex. And so she's the, you know, kind of an authority on what's really going on with Codex. And she was just at the Codex meetings in Rome. So it'd be good to have her on, and she's going to be down meeting with. I had introduced her to Dr. Gabriel Cousins, and they connected, and I know she's going to go visit him.
That's probably something that you should give a little overview on to those folks out there that don't know what the Codex is.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, there's a lot of information about Codex. What I don't have in front of me is Dr. Rima LeBeau. Greg, do you remember the name of it? Health Freedom, Health Freedom something is her website.
Is it a coalition?
Huh?
Was it the Health Freedom Information, or was it Health Freedom?
Oh, Health Solutions. Health Freedom Solutions, something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get you introduced so we can get that information. I mean, she is really on top of it. So let's get her connected with you, Rain, and we have
that
information.
We can do a show on that.
We can get the latest information, the latest updates to people, and what we need to be watching for. I know one of the most recent things is supporting Ron Paul, Representative Ron Paul's bills for protecting our rights to supplements and things like that, because there's been another recent attack where they've tried to push something through. So you want to, you know, kind of keep up on what's going on, and express, you know, if we've got to demand our rights. Consumer demand is a very powerful thing, and that is part of what our government is set up. And if you don't express your opinions, and if we don't watch and make sure we're making a stand for our rights, the pharmaceutical companies are certainly making a stand until too many of us say, hey, no, this isn't good. So it's very, very important that we stay up on things like that. And also things like those of you that have been complaining about, you know, this administration, and it's gotten so blatantly out of hand.
Oh, good grief.
You know, call Nancy Pelosi, call the Speaker of the House and ask, demand that we want impeachment, that or whatever your opinion, express it. And, you know, if you don't use your voice, you don't have one. So I think it's very, very important stuff that we keep up with, you know, what's going on in the world, and also make a stand for our rights, for our freedoms. And that's what this country is really about. And let's go back to our constitutional freedoms. The ACLU has done some phenomenal work with trying to protect our constitutional rights. So I think it's some of it's about being, divine rights activists.
Right, yeah. Because they are our divine rights. And, Dr. Greg, if someone were to say to you, well, you know I need an antibiotic, so I've had a lot of antibiotics in my life. You wouldn't be able to say to them, well, let's mix golden seal, myrrh gum, powdiarco, echinacea, and those, let's mix those herbs together because they will deal with the virus and the bacteria together, both, and build the immune system too. You're, by law, not really allowed to tell people that, are you? Is that how that is?
No, I don't think that's how that is at all. No, by law, I could indeed do that. Of course I could do that. No, there would be nothing that would prevent me from doing that. Now, it might not be felt to be the standard of care in the community, but there would be nothing that could prevent an allopathic from coming forward with that same recommendation, other than ignorance, number one, not knowing to put together that concoction of recommendations, and number two, and that would be the primary reason why you would likely not hear that. And the other would be the concern that if I did make that recommendation to someone, that would not be considered the standard of care in the community. And as such, the allopathic physician is pretty concerned that if he does something that is outside of the standard of care, and should something not go as anticipated with that recommendation, they would be open to criticism and lawsuits. And understand that many physicians are very concerned that if they don't provide the standard of care in the community, and something comes awry, and this being a victim society, that it's not the individual who made the choices that got them in the position that they're in, which I personally believe they have made all the choices that have gotten them to whomever it is that is their health care provider for whatever circumstances they be they what we would consider to be accidents, which I don't think really happened, or if they have set up the circumstances to place themselves in the need of assistance from a physician. So these folks are there, but the concern that I would have with making that recommendation that you just gave was, if indeed that individual didn't do or went through a detox and didn't understand a detox, that they didn't get better immediately, but took a while to clear their symptoms so that they could get to the aspect of a cure, if they were indeed a victim type of individual, they'd say, okay, I'm going to sue you. So yeah. You have to understand that the physician's in a very, very uncomfortable position when we utilize the natural medicine concept. I mean, when I'm taking people and I'm bringing them through and making recommendations using naturopathic components and or using the EE system, I have to be very, very careful to explain to them that they may not immediately improve before they clear that symptomatology.
Right.
So understand that it's a double-edged sword for those of us who are brave enough to practice outside of the allopathic model. Mm-hmm. We run the risk of having criticism of our peers, which is not inconsequential. And number two, we run the risk of having someone determine that they would like to follow the litigious component.
Okay.
And it certainly wouldn't be considered the normal. You know, I can just imagine the fellow who would make that recommendation when someone, one of his peers, who doesn't have any idea what any of the elements are that you just gave, come forward and give testimony saying, that's certainly not anything that I'd recommend. And I'm a member of, and he would go through all of his qualifications as a professional in the community. So until we get the medical school coming forward and training the students currently in training to be physicians about these elements, and remember, what you just recommended probably wouldn't be anything, and the same would likely be true with regard to many of the nutritional recommendations. I mean, if we're going to be looking at nutrition, we have to understand that the American Dietetic Association have us naturopathic proponents.
Mm-hmm. And the
so
good
again,
news
it
is,
wouldn't be considered to be the standard of care in the community.
Yeah, and the good news is the medical schools are changing. Here in Hawaii, you know, we do have an integrative clinic going on, going in at Burns, the Burns Medical School at the University of Hawaii. And that's in process right now. And again, it's because they want to draw more of the medical students that really want a strong integrative base, you know, within their medical training. So it's exciting times that way. And again, it's the law of consumer demand. You know, we talked about this before, that 55% or approximately of the healthcare dollar is actually going to complementary and alternative naturopathic modalities at this point. So we're voting with our dollars, and that's very, very important.
Right, right.
It's huge, it's wonderful, and it will indeed bring forward the changes that are in the best interest of the American wellness movement.
Yay!
Yay!
Yeah, it's time. It's time for people to, you know, wake up to this. I, you know, in another subject that's very near and dear to my heart, I had a client last week that came in, and she came in to see me, and she brought her son with her, and I believe he was 7, maybe 8 years old, not older than that. And he was clearly autistic, rocking back and forth. You know, I won't go into all of the symptoms that he exhibited, but he was. I didn't need anyone to tell me that he was autistic. And so I asked her about him. And she said that 24 hours after he was given the MMRI, he collapsed. And she said, within several hours after the shot, he had a high fever, and he was clearly ill. And then 24 hours after, he collapsed on the floor. He couldn't walk, and of course he's back up and walking. But the child will never have any semblance of a normal life. He talks, and you can't understand, you know, what he's saying, and he points up into the sky and jibber-jabbers, and, I mean, there's, you know, it's over for him. And I'd like to, you know, maybe hear what both of you have to say. I know what Sandra Rose is going to say about the inoculations, and, you know, both she and I know Dr. John Barron, not doctor, but John Barron. He turned down MD. But John Barron, who lost his brother passed on. What can we do about this, Dr. Greg? What, you know, what's up with the inoculations? And now we have one for hepatitis. And when is it going to be clear to everybody that we've got a problem happening here?
Well, that is a very, very tough one to really, really come clear with what is the best for all concerned. I concur that there are definite problems with the utilization of global inoculation for disease processes that have limited incidence of occurring. I also understand the larger global public health issue that indeed, if we have certain amounts of the population who are indeed exposed to these disease processes and thereafter strengthening their immune system, I understand both sides of the model. And there is no question that if indeed they could do this, do the inoculations with agents that indeed allowed people not to be exposed to additional after effects or additional effects, that would be an ideal situation. I don't see that happening, and I don't see a means with with which this will occur. And right now, if we continue to use the model of disease versus wellness in our general population, there isn't going to be change. So that while using that model, which is indeed the standard of care, there isn't a very good solution presented. Now, in listening to your description, I'm going to now move away and vehemently disagree with many of the things you said with regard to what can indeed happen for this individual who's had this exposure. No, this is not a fixed neurologic deficit. Accepting it as it is just not a responsible way for somebody in energy medicine to look at where that individual is right now. Are there options available? Yes. Is the EE system a very viable alternative for this child to change his current clinical status? Absolutely. Will there be other additional energetics that are made available in the future for people to reverse this disease process? Absolutely.
So
saying that this child's life is over is something that, Rain, I'm going to back you up and say, no, I don't accept what you just said.
Okay. And I agree with you that there are viable ways. They're just not available to this woman. Her financial situation wouldn't allow her to get into the EE system. She is doing everything she can right now to help her child. But I understand the part that you disagree with, but the way it sits right now, for this woman being a woman on disability herself and not having insurance and being in a financial situation that doesn't allow her to get into these other things, if it stays exactly the way it is right now, this child's life is very limited. Now, if a sponsor comes along or I can work with this woman and get her into a different financial situation, then okay, her son could get help. But without that kind of help, that's how it is.
Again, empowerment means making
choices.
Better choices, and we're offering
better choices.
Offering that. There is a lot that can be done with autism that doesn't necessarily cost a lot of money. One of the things that has been proposed that is a phenomenal result that they're getting with it is something called the Popeye diet.
Right.
Now, one of the things is with autism, that the mercury exposure is definitely being explored. The mercury that's been in the vaccinations has been linked to a lot of the autistic results that we're seeing, because mercury is a neurotoxin for the brain. It's extremely poisonous heavy metal, and it destroys brain cells. Mercury is definitely linked to the autism piece. Now, they have mandated, from what I understand, that that's been taken out of the mumps, measles, rubella vaccine. I'm not sure. I chose to not allow any of my four children to have those vaccinations because I found that, those were not acceptable in how they were formulated. However, there are also ways to work with that as far as balancing out their nutrition, making sure you're not giving them aspartame and MSG and all these things. And
what is the Popeye diet?
Yeah, Popeye diet. Now, this is something I can look up online probably. Look up Popeye diet and autism. But it's basically spinach and olive oil. Now, see,
Popeye's
is something that anybody can
wonderful
get.
Friends. One is I eat my spinach, and I love my olive.
Uh-huh. So spinach and olive oil.
And they found that these people would crave spinach so much, they just eat it right out of the bag. A lot of them. So, sometimes the body knows what it needs, and there is a real element with that is supporting change for these Also, we are looking to put it in very, very soon, putting the energy enhancement system in a center for autistic children in Pennsylvania, because we have seen repeatedly wonderful results, wonderful shifts with children with autism. And some of them, it's just like they're waiting to have the environment that allows them to really express and be who they really are here. And it's like they've gone internal until they find something they can really relate to as a good reason for being on the planet. You know, some of these are the special children that have come that are what they're calling indigos or,
right.
or different things. And so that's some of what's going on, too, is these children that have come in with special messages or special missions. And you want to support that versus, you know, saying they'll never be, you know, quite right. Some of them, it's because that is their special gift. One way or another, it's all on purpose, and it can all support everybody in fulfilling highest purpose. And some of it is just to expose the toxicity of what's been done in the medical arena or in our environmental toxins and things like that, and to make changes on this planet so it can be a healthier place for humanity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I was never really clear, I guess, my understanding about why these inoculations were thought up. I mean, I never knew anyone that died from mumps, measles, chickenpox. In my day growing up, we all got it.
Yeah, and well, that's pretty much because you were inoculized. And remember, measles wiped out the American Indian. Literally wiped out nearly the entire culture. It
yes.
was a disease that came in, devastated, and killed. Mumps was the same. Truly, truly was a killer of children. So, and rubella was the same way. So understand that these weren't decisions made not based on infant mortality and mortality and morbidity studies. It came, the reason that we came up with using the inoculations had to do with if you indeed utilized either a small portion of a live aspect or later, as they became more sophisticated, using a dead viral type of load, we knew that the immune system, if insulted just in a minimal fraction, would respond to this, and through cellular and immunology memory, would be able to fight off this disease process because it was something that it already had previously been exposed to. So it did indeed come
now
from
that
germ
was the theory.
Theory,
and there's some good to that theory. However, there was a lot of different elements put into those vaccinations, and the history now, you know, because it's been a lot more years of use and a lot more history of what's been seen. And so they're realizing that that insult to the immune system is also creating some of the immune system problems that we have today, you know, such as MS. Some of that's been linked to vaccinations as well.
And again, Sandra, I think that when we look at that, we're not sure if it is indeed the viral exposure or whatever it is that they are looking to put in, or if it's the carriers that go through those vaccinations. And I think what we're finding, and it's a combination of the carrier and that element that we are indeed working to vaccinate against, that is the issue. And quite frankly, most of conventional medicine is not particularly interested in evaluating that, and they look and say, okay, what are the statistics? Well, with the vaccination, and initially it was a very, very low percentage who weren't, you know, who had the adverse additional response to the side effects, for want of a better term. That they say, okay, look, this is one in 4 million that has an adverse response. And they just said, well, that left us quite a few other people who were protected from what were then deadly illnesses.
Well, question, Dr. Gregg, why did it have such a profound effect on the Native Americans and for those folks in the later years, the thousands and thousands of children that had mumps and had measles and had chicken pox and it didn't wipe them out.
It's called herd immunity, okay? And at the beginning, if no one has ever been exposed to a disease process or a disharmonic process, it can easily affect those people and lead to severe illness. If you've never been exposed to something, it can go through whole communities and decimate that community.
So now,
start getting exposure to it, didn't kill 100% of the Indians, okay?
No, of course not.
But it killed the vast majority of them. Many, many, many. Just went very, very quickly. Now, once they have been exposed, then there is indeed something that's called herd immunity. And it is just a small portion initially, and as it grows, your immune system incorporates this as something that is viewed as adverse to the community. And it usually doesn't happen in one generation. It happens after
several generations.
Exposures, and that's where that comes from.
So we had already built an immunity to it. It wasn't killing people.
It wasn't
like it did when it was, you know, first introduced by the pilgrims, if you will, to the Native American nations. So in the 50s and the 60s, when we began developing all of these inoculations to give to our children, the generations had already built an immunity to it. So why then would we come in and say, okay, let's inoculate these kids or these people when there's already... See, I'm just trying to understand, you know, the thought process behind this. If we'd already built the immunity against
the newborn child doesn't have that. The newborn child doesn't get that through the community.
All right, we're back. Dr. Greg, are you there?
I am here.
I'm so glad.
I definitely guess. I decided that my description of immunology and how we're using vaccinations just plain wasn't worth listening to on the air.
I'm telling you, this whole show tonight, we have had one of these after another. And, you know, I hope that you don't think that I'm challenging, and if I am, it's because I want very much to understand.
No, I fully appreciate where you are, and it is one of those elements that needs to be explored, and it indeed turns out to be a risk-benefit ratio and on how best to protect the general American public from some of these disease processes that were just rampant.
Yeah.
In looking at one of the examples that I like to use, or one of the ones that I have some familiarity with, is like infantile paralysis, polio. Polio came into the United States and absolutely came through and decimated the American public.
Yeah.
And it came through, and it was a viral disease process that we were not accustomed to, and it came through and called paresis from all levels. And I'm sure that I know if I can remember, and I think you may also remember what it was like in the 1950s.
In the 50s. Oh, I remember. Greg, do you remember dog days when you weren't supposed to go in the water swimming?
Absolutely.
What was that about?
We didn't know what was going on with polio, and we decided that it was carried somehow through fecal contaminants, and therefore it could be in our swimming pool. And as such, we were concerned that just by going in the water, you could end up having polio. Now, there is nothing there that actually follows either conventional or non-conventional thought that would be accurate. But as it turns out, you know, that was what was felt to be a carrier at that time. Now, this was a virus that came in, and it attacked selectively the central nervous system, particularly the spinal cord, and this was a virus that lived latently in the spinal cord, and when it manifested itself by getting to a certain level, could indeed cause paresis. And it could happen, you know, we saw a lot of children with lower extremity involvement, and if it got really bad, it could affect further up the spinal cord and cause infantile or other levels of paresis of the cord, the spinal cord itself, and the musculature that allowed one to breathe well. So, you know, we had people who had paresis and actually lost their lives to polio.
Right.
Then there were these wonderful guys who came by who figured out through virology, Dr. Salk and Jonas Salk came forward and said, look, if we take live portions, very smallly diluted, kind of using the concept of homeopathy, and mm-hmm. expose those to people, they may very well be strong enough to fight this thing off. And if you remember back in the 1950s, standing there in line as kids, I mean, I was born in 1952, and I can remember in 1958 getting those sugar cubes put under my tongue,
yeah.
and then again in 1960 having more given to me. But first they used what was a live vaccine, which meant that when they gave you that stuff, that there was some live virus in that, and you could get sick, and many people did.
Yeah.
They got a small case of polio that lasted for 3 to 5 days, and it was one stinky viral illness, but it allowed your immune system to move forward and be able to combat that so that you wouldn't get the full-blown effect of exposure to the live virus because it was diluted out. And then later, they figured out that there were some different types of ways of using dead viruses and dead exposures so that you wouldn't have nearly the level of illness when you were exposed. And yet it still allowed your body to have an immune system remembered what this thing was like so that if you ever got it, you'd be able to fight it off early.
And then
did that help you a little bit understanding how that works?
Yeah.
That we're seeing now is that sometimes in addition to getting exposed to just that pure component, the agents that we're using, the solutions that we're using in addition to the viral or bacterial exposure, and most of these are viral, on a small percentage of people, if the carrier agent happens to have some mercurials in them, these folks can have other effects, which you and I would know as side effects, but I like to use the term other effects or after effects, particularly after effects, because it's not right when you give it to them. It's afterwards that people manifest additional responses to that, and it's in a small percentage of people. But in that small percentage of people where this occurs, it is a devastating response.
Yeah.
I am back.
Hi there.
You're back. Yes, and of course, well, I was talking about some of those things when I went away. But I am back. I would tell people that really do their research. There's a lot of information now about the vaccinations. I made a real conscious, educated choice to accept responsibility for my children's health and did not allow my children to be exposed because I read what the ingredients were and what the effects might be and really did the history, because we found now that a lot of the positive side also was creating insult and injury, whether it's from the mercury, you know, creating toxic effects on the brain, or there's, you know, added insult and injury to the immune system. So you really want to tell people to we want choice in this country, and people that want to make that choice, I mean, read the information. There's a lot of research on the vaccinations, and make conscious, informed choices for yourself and your family.
Well, and I think another choice that we need to be able to make is to not inoculate our children, and that they still be allowed in schools. You know, there are many schools that if your children are not inoculated with everything, they can't attend that school.
And I found that really was not true. As long as you did the waivers, each state has a little different process. There's a lot of information on how to do that. And also, a lot of the schools would accept homeopathic versions, which, you know, homeopathic vaccinations, which is what they use a lot in the UK, for example. And so there's different options there. But all four of my kids never got those.
Okay. Well, my understanding is that it's a huge fight to not have your children inoculated. I wish that I would have known more about this when my kids, you know, of course, my children, I don't know if you have any as old as mine, do you? Mine are 37 and 34.
Mine are 21 to 35, so.
Okay. Well, I wasn't aware. I was asleep when I had my children about these sorts of things. So I never knew that I had any choice or that there was anything amiss, you know, that about anything, that there was anything that I should have looked at, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, Dr. Len Horowitz, by the way, Dr. Leonard Horowitz has written books about vaccinations. He has a lot of really good information for those that really want to get the information. And there's other doctors, too, that have done. There's been a lot of expose, even on 2020, et cetera, on the problems that there have been with the immunizations, and one of the biggest ones being the connection between the mercury and the autism.
Right.
So, you know, it's being explored, and supposedly the mercury has been banned now from being put in some of the childhood, you know, immunization products. So, anyway, this is a good topic, though, and again, a lot of it's about us having the right to choose to take responsibility for our own health versus just trusting it to some government agency,
right.
And especially when they really don't know all the effects and side effects and make an informed choice as to whether you're going to, have your own children exposed to those things versus being mandated by the government.
We should do a show, with Mr. Horowitz.
Yeah, Dr. Leonard Horowitz, a Harvard physician, has a MPH, or a doctor of public health, and he's brilliant out of Harvard, and has done a lot of information on that, a lot of research.
Good material.
It'd be good to have him on. He lives here in Hawaii.
It might be interesting also to bring someone on from the school system or school systems and find out what recourse we can take to not inoculate our children. What do we have to do to get them in to the schools?
Yeah, well, Dr. Leonard Horowitz knows those. He's been helping with that, researching that, and knows those laws and rights, across the U.S. at least. So he'd be a very, very good guest for us to have on as far as for that topic.
Okay.
And I think if you were interested in having balance on that, finding some physician other than myself, who truly does not have the expertise and can't give you the statistics with regard to an infectious disease perspective, to get a balanced perspective of where the infectious disease physician would have an opportunity to talk to Dr. Horowitz to see where it is that people would like to make their choice on that. Because I think that that's a topic that there is indeed an element to it where it takes a certain percentage of the population to be exposed as it is currently presented, that once you get more than 90% of the population who has the protection, then the incidence and the ability of that disease process to propagate itself goes down. So that's the other side of the allopathic model that I don't claim to have true expertise in, but do have the exposure from the classical percentage and presentation of information, that I think that if we had a really good discussion between an allopathic infectious disease individual and Dr. Len Horowitz, I think that
Dr. Len Horowitz is fully trained in infectious disease and in all the research in that as part of public health. That was part of his background research training study. Yeah, so he is a world authority on that.
And that's why
good to have him on. Another authority that might be good to have on would be Dr. Wolfgang Hess, who's the medical director for NASA,
a
world authority on tropical disease.
I think that would be an excellent, and I think that Wolfgang would add balance to that discussion, yes.
Yeah, and he's really a world authority on tropical diseases and Lyme's disease. And I spoke with him today. Let's have him on the show. He's awesome.
Yeah.
He also has our technology and is documenting everything and the research with the energy enhancement system. Has it in his home, using it daily, right now. It'd be great to have him on, though, too. Let's have these people that have the real, are real authorities globally, and get their perspectives. And there's a lot of research, and some of this is, we're in a very good time now with the Internet where you can Google anything and do your homework.
Yeah.
I like to recommend Mercola.com as a good site for people to research. And we did talk about this week as far as with IAB and Freedom for Life. We want to put together an educational part to the site, where we can really recommend the research that is proven in the alternative, complementary, integrative fields and just, you know, in as relates to how do we produce health. And we don't produce more health by putting in more dead stuff, or, you know, you don't get healthier if you keep poisoning yourself. You've got to quit poisoning yourself to produce health. And it's fairly simple as a concept. And yet, you know, people need the information to know, you know, what is really going to be healthy for them and their families so they can make better choices. So that's going to be one of the benefits with IAB that I'm very excited about. IAB, Freedom for Life. People can go to our website, you know, www.eesystem.com, and that does have a link. And I guess we're in process of getting a link to, you know, an automatic site where people can sign up for that Freedom for Life program very easily. Yeah, Greg, do you have that yet?
No, it's not in place yet today. It was one of the things on the to-do list.
It's on the to-do list.
Yeah.
And Rain, I know people can contact you in regards to more information, and they can sign up as part of our organization for supporting Freedom for Life. They can contact you to do that as well.
Yeah, they can. I'm not as knowledgeable, excuse me, as Dr. Greg is, and as you are, but I can at least point them in the direction of, you know, we can get them to Doug, and we can get them to the website, and, you know, we can do that. So, yeah, that would be great. And, you know, here's my email address if anybody wants to get a hold of me for anything, like maybe a subject that you would like to hear us do a show on. I am at Rain of Truth, RAINOFTRUTH, Rain of Truth at Cox.net, and that's COX, Cox.net. So I would be more than happy to give you whatever information I have, and then of course get you to the experts. So you know, if you have questions,
and let's
that
really,
I
really want to thank you, Rain, for being such a great resource. And Rain of Truth, this is Talk Truth Radio, and it's about, you know, bringing the options, the information that people want to have. But you have been a phenomenal support and resource for people for many, many, many years, and also quite renowned as a medical intuitive and as a psychic. So we do want to acknowledge you and really acknowledge you've done radio for almost 12 years now and have a tremendous range of information and with bringing, you know, really top people, top guests together. And you really put on an amazing expo or a conference that was the, what was that one called that we had there in Arizona?
The No-Nonsense Prophecy Conference.
No-Nonsense Prophecy Conference.
And I named
now,
the
that
planet
was quite a group of people
afterwards
that you brought together.
Did you tell,
I want to acknowledge you, and I just
that?
Want to say people can call you or contact you for your classes and for, you know, classes and CDs and DVDs for your courses. And also, you do phone readings, don't you?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, so please,
I'm
going to ask that our audience please take advantage of the gifts that can be gained through connecting with Rain. Dr. Rain is incredible as a psychic and as a counselor and as a consultant. It's her passion, and she loves to share that gift, and she has a lot of resources to really share. So I want to thank you for all of your great work, and I want to encourage everybody to take advantage of it.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And so yeah, I was just wondering if you showed Dr. Greg your award when we named a star after you.
Not today.
I don't know. Greg, have you seen that? It's on my wall in my office.
Well, if it's there, I was inattentive to seeing that particular element.
It's really quite lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I thought that for all of the that Sandra Rose Michael has done, that she deserved to have an award and to have a star named after her. So we gave her an award at the No Nonsense Prophecy Conference. And there were some fabulous people there. Dr. John Gray, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus fame.
He did a great talk. Yeah, he is a wonderful, wonderful man. Great work. Yeah, and he really presented some of the nutritional program that addressed the differences in the hormonal levels of men and women. Great, great, great material. Love John Gray's work.
Yeah, yeah. And we had Wayne Green there. I don't know if, you know, he's a name that I think everybody should know or could know, but I find that little do. Wayne Green is the man that put the cell phone in everybody's hand and the PC computer in everybody's office. He started
what you'd call a uber genius. A uber genius. And yet he was talking all about raw food diet.
Yeah, yeah.
And the importance of that and how that creates longevity. And nobody knows how old that man is. We weren't quite sure.
Yeah.
I think he was 90-something.
He was
still emailing
me. Hotel to the Shrine Auditorium, because he walks 5 miles a day. And he is way into his 80s. And he travels around. Now, you know, we should get him on the show. He travels all around the world talking with folks about, you know, different forms of fuel that doesn't rape the fossils from the earth, and eating raw. And, you know, he eats a piece of raw liver every day.
Right. I mean, he's doing even the raw meat thing.
Yeah, that
very
kind
much
of turns
the raw diet.
Off.
And he's, you know, just an uber genius, an inventor, fabulous, fabulous man. And it would be great to have him on the show.
Yeah, it'd be good show. Well, guys, you know, it's 10:30. And that means that we have come to the end of this segment. And, you know, I want to thank you, too, Dr. Sandra Rose Michael, for producing this, or sponsoring is the word I'm looking for. I'm detoxing. I just can't be expected right now to be completely on my game. For sponsoring, thank you for sponsoring this show, because you make it possible for us to, you know, get this information out to people. And that's the thing that we endeavor to do, is to bring this information to you and let you know that there are alternative ways to fix everything. We're not just stuck. We can get the job done.
Yeah,
so,
we
Dr.
love
Greg,
miracles.
I want to thank you for coming on tonight.
My pleasure, I assure you.
And we look forward to having you back on again. And EESystem.com, check out the scaler. You know, oh, and I meant to tell you this before we get going. You know, Dr. Sandra, that I'm going through a Herzheimer's right now. I'm really, really in the law of cure. And I realized yesterday, that I didn't have my medallion on.
Uh-oh.
And I had soaked in the salt tub, and, oh, I was feeling really, really bad. And last evening, I was lying in bed, and I thought, my medallion, I don't have my medallion on. And I went and got it, and do you know, and this is truth, I felt the energy spread through my body, and it instantly took me up a level. Now, was I 100%? No, because I have to go through this. I've got to get this stuff out of my body. But I felt it make a difference in the way I felt. I can't tell you if I had a little less of a headache or maybe even a better understanding of what was going through my body, but it made a difference.
It works. The technology works, and people can call. There's a toll-free number to call Dr. Greg Gerber's office in Houston, and you can order medallions there, the EE medallion. It's 877-777-6459. Is that correct?
9465.
Okay, give the number again.
Would you give the correct number, please?
877-777-9465. Or, if you're on your computer, just do eemedallion.com.
Either
eemedallion.com or go to eesystem.com, and you can click on ordering a medallion right off the EE System site. And you can also get other scalar-enhanced products by scrolling down to the bottom and going to scalarcore.com. And there's a link right on the site to Scalarcore International and ordering scalar enhanced products through them as well. But get your medallions. They do work.
Yeah, and Sandra and I were talking about you sending me several medallions, and I will create beaded work, clear quartz crystal, rubies, sapphires, whatever, and send it back and charge the whole thing so that we have custom, beautiful pieces of jewelry that the medallion hangs off of. And
Rain, you do fabulous work, and those are going to be awesome pieces for people. Really great work, really great pieces where people can have really their own custom EE medallion and have it be a work of true beauty and art for them.
Yeah, I make beautiful jewelry.
Well, Rain,
you
I'm
really
so
do.
Delighted.
You're good at it.
Rain, I'm
so they
so
should
delighted.
Contact you. Or let us know. Let any of us know. And we wish everybody have a beautiful energy-enhanced life. You can't have too much energy. And, here we are sharing Talk Truth Radio, and may yourselves vibrate with that resonance of truth always.
And, Dr. Greg, finish what you were saying.
I'm just so delighted, Rain, that you had the opportunity to have an exposure to the energy that is truly within those medallions.
Yeah.
And while it didn't bring you to full resolution, as you said, you had more to do, you noticed a very discernible difference with regard to the energy that is provided from the EE systems through the medallion.
And you know,
the
word comes
it is
to me,
significant.
The word that comes to me is support.
Yes.
Because the medallion, the consciousness of the stone being charged with the EE system knows that I have to purge all that stuff out of my body. It understands that. And so I felt supported.
Mm-hmm. And
it lessened.
Greg, I know we've got a little extra time on this show, so can you share a little bit about what some of the feedback from Toronto was with a lady that did get a dozen medallions, and they did some testing with them. What happened there?
Well, one of the individuals purchased a number of medallions for me, and she had an opportunity to have a piece of equipment that could assess how people's energetic state was with or without the medallion. And she went to this site and had some folks there, and she herself said, well, test me, and they tested her. Thereafter, they put her on this machine, and all of a sudden, her scores went up significantly. So she knew after she wore the medallion, the second testing. So she said that was pretty demonstrative to her. And then she had an opportunity to share these results with other people within that center. And lo and behold, thereafter, it was one of those things where you could show a before and after very, very directly. And now,
yeah,
the other
I remember hearing what the numbers were. It was like you know, 60 before and 900 after or something like
60
that.
60 before and 900 thereafter, exactly, on whichever scale they were using. And
yes,
the other
they went
thing,
from 60 to 900, and then they did it with multiple. It was like the same with each person they tested.
Exactly. So that she had her supply of those medallions available to her rapidly depleted from the 10 that she had. I think she sold 6 or 7 right then and there during the course of that day. Now, the other place that we've seen that tested, Sandra, was when we were in Hawaii, and we had someone who was using Carillion photography.
I was just sitting here thinking about that. I'm going to have my pictures done.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We had people who were sitting there and had their first pictures taken with their Carillion photography. Then we put the medallion on them and saw the difference in their patterns. And they were dramatic, absolutely dramatic changes. And at some point in time, Don's going to be able to get those, so I can put those on our website for all to see. It's just remarkable about how quickly that was changed without changing anything else in their environment other than putting the medallion around their neck, how these folks changed. Now, on a very personal basis, I have noted as a physician that those days when I neglect to put on my medallion, which I have to admit is getting less and less frequent. But on those days when I'm in the environment of a hospital where we have MRI, EMF, and all five of less than healthful energetic fields.
Certainly hospitals
ever tells
are not
a
healthy environment.
If anybody ever tells you a hospital is a good place to be, as Sandra was saying, a hospital is a toxic environment. And I will note that on those days when I don't wear my medallions, I'm going, oops, what happened to me today? Because I can feel the difference when I do not remember. Not so much on the days that I do remember, because I've become accustomed to having the protective element of the medallion that produces a null field, which diminishes the effect of EMF, ELF, and radiation, and literally just diminishes those adverse effects for me so I can feel more like my normal energetic self.
What it's really doing is it's maintaining the integrity of the body, you know, the natural integrity, so that the body's not affected by the detrimental field or also by the toxins in the environment, whether it's the environmental pollutants from driving on the highway or you know, any of the other toxic elements in a hospital or anywhere else around. So it really just helps maintain the strength and the integrity of the body itself and to be in an optimal state of homeostasis.
Does the medallion have to be recharged, or will it carry that charge forever?
It is our belief that it will carry that charge forever. And certainly as long as either you, me, or Sandra are on this planet.
Okay.
Infinity waves last a long time.
Oh, yeah. Infinity.
You got it. That's, I knew where she was going. That's why I chuckled faster.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's true. Infinity lasts a long time, and these are infinity waves that they're programmed with. And so, it is permanent. It stays. You can test or retest things 6 months later, and it's as great a charge or greater because it's a fusion technology.
Well,
and then it's also doing the electrical precursors for the body. It's the energy the body can then relate to for maintaining the integrity so that the, you know, the cells don't collapse or mutate kind of thing. It doesn't collapse the fields or the cell membranes in the body, so they maintain their healthy integrity and stay oxygenated and free-flowing. And there's a lot that you can see with live blood cell analysis with that as well. So, exciting technology, easy way to carry a piece of the EE system with you wherever you go, and that's the EE medallion.
Yeah, I highly recommend anyone there's two categories of people that could use the medallion. Those that have some sort of a dis-ease or an illness and those wanting to prevent ever having a disease or an illness in your body.
So does that mean those who know they need it and those who have yet to figure it out?
Well, that was just one of my little attempts at humor.
Yeah, we can never be too healthy or too happy or have too much love. And it's in that line that we just want our fullest and highest good always.
I want very much to create some custom pieces and get the whole thing charged in the scalar. I get excited. I started to say this earlier. I get excited when I think about water clear quartz being charged in the system, in the technology. Quartz is programmable, and it has the ability to exponentially affect and reprogram itself. It just goes on and on ad infinitum, so to speak. So I'm wondering what clear quartz charged with the technology would be like.
No, you're absolutely right, and it's a great interface with the body and with the crystalline structures in the blood. It creates a great interface, and it just takes that program and keeps running it. You know, it just takes it and it does. You know, they're dense informational, intentional fields where. And the crystals love it, and they just carry it.
You know, for instance, we could make a piece also out of, say, opal and tanzanite. Opal and those two stones are known for their healing effect on the eyes. So, I don't know, could we make people see again?
Well, we have certainly been seeing that with the energy enhancement system. We just had... a doctor who has run rehab for Mount Sinai Hospital. She was saying how she was in the middle of the system there at the Enhancement Institute in Houston. She looked across the room and realized that she was reading this little clock, and she hadn't been able to read anything across any room since she was at least 18. So we do have people that have, that's been a common thing with people in the technology. And so a tanzanite, an opal piece would be absolutely stunningly gorgeous, but it also would be very, very useful for those people that want to improve their vision internally and within and without, their clarity of vision at every level.
Yeah, and then, some of the other characteristics, ruby. Now this would be interesting because the old saying behind ruby is, for one who retains a bit of ruby, from wealth shall never depart. So what if we charged that aspect? Fairly boggles one's mind, doesn't it, as to where we
can
go.
That's what my medallion is rubies, okay?
Yeah, everybody should have a little ruby. So it would be interesting to see, just what... effects we could get from charging the stones with all their different things that have been known for years and years. And for anybody that's out there thinking, oh, come on, what does she mean, wear this stone and you get that? Well, the technology of the mineral kingdom has been known for thousands of years. Why do you
the
think
Ayurvedic
Chinese
gem therapy? Dr. Lily Botches has studied that, but it's a whole Ayurvedic field of study that's been goes back over 5,000 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so this is, but these are the things we want to bring these ancient technologies forward, in a way that optimizes them, taking the ancient technology with the modern technology to create optimal benefits for everybody, for humanity. We just want it to be a healthier place for everyone. But let's do our signature, our custom lines and bring that out. And everybody can contact you, Rain, and ask for for a custom piece.
Yeah. I'll make you something just for you.
Yeah. And that's ideal, you know, to really align with a person's energy and their highest intention for themselves and have a beautiful, beautiful piece.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I told you that I would get out my catalogs. I have the a source for the jade. We call them little donuts. I have the source for the jade. And, you know, the Chinese have worn jade for millennium, for longevity and you know, pristine health. And so it'd be very, very interesting. Let's get some custom pieces out there and see what happens. How fun.
Yeah. And again, we like it because it works really good. It was fun for me to hear how much you loved your medallion, because I know you've dealt with you know, the powers of stones and the gemstone therapy and all the crystals and making power pieces for people and custom jewelry for people with the, you know, with intent and with power as transformational pieces. And it was fun to hear, you know, what your experience of the EE medallion was.
Yes, I felt supported. And I just got a lessening of the symptoms. I've, you know, people going into this kind of transformational lifestyle where you just say, you know, I'm done. I'm going to honor my body, and I'm not going to feed into the old behavioral patterns anymore. And I'm going to start with my body, and then I'm going to go right through and help to lift the consciousness of the whole earth. Well, okay, great. Large undertaking, small undertaking, whatever you want to call it, but it's an undertaking, because I think a lot of people don't realize what happens to your body. And, you know, so many times I've heard people say, well, I went vegetarian and I got so tired, and I was talking to my doctor, and the doctor said, well, you know, have some chicken and you'll feel better. Well, yeah, because you stop the detoxing process. And you begin, you know, that the body begins settling that stuff right back down in, and, you know, it relieves the symptoms of the detox. It is no small undertaking to do this, but worthwhile. You know how to contact us, and we're here to be of service. I was reading something just today, and it talked about how when we move out of the place of what's in it for us, when we move out of that, and we say to the people of the earth, to the children of the earth and the earth herself, forget about what I get from this. How can I be of service for you? How can I help you? That's when life as a whole changes for us. And I think the three of us have really done that. Now, yes, we have to take care of ourselves and we have to make a living, but I'll bet that among the three of us, there's not one of us that doesn't give away more than we get. It's just the place that we are in our life now, and we truly understand that if, in order for us to get, we must give.
You know, the focus is on the service, and as we fulfill our highest purpose, the whole universe moves to support us in that. And so, you know, to know that we always have everything we really need to be able to fulfill our highest purposes. And,
yeah.
And when you commit to that, you know, service to humanity, the planet, and your people, it's richly rewarding, and the universe does truly move to support that and more as we move in these times. Because this is an amazing time on the planet. We've waited a long time for this on the planet. And we're here.
We're here.
Glad you're all here with us. Aloha.
This is our time to serve. Amen.
It is. So I'll say goodnight to the both of you, and Good night to all our listeners out there. Please come back next week. We have Dr. Effie Chow coming on. I'm all excited about doing a show with her. She is a grand master Qigong, of Qigong, and she's going to talk to us about getting people up and out of wheelchairs. Everything is in the breath, and it's how we direct the breath. It's how we direct the energy in our body. And she's got some fabulous stories. So stay tuned, guys. Come back next week, and I think we'll have a good show for you. Good night, everybody.
The talk radio you have just enjoyed is brought to you by Dr. Sandra Rose Michael and Energy Enhancement Systems. Have a very blessed week, and please join us next Friday at 8 p.m. Pacific Time when we return with more exciting talk. To find out more about the host and sponsor, visit drrainmorgan.com and energyenhancementsystems.com.